Hello, everyone. We are your hosts, Susan, Katie, and Jill. We are longtime educators who are here to share with you all things education. We want to inspire you, help you innovate, dream new visions, and best of all, make you laugh. The education field is not an easy one, but we do it because we love kids and we want the very best for them. Join us as we laugh, learn, and get schooled on KLED & Co. Hello, everybody. It is Jill, Katie, and Susan back with Kale Education and Company's Get Schooled. And as you know, we start every podcast with something funny or lighthearted. And actually, we got to tell you, like, this is an impromptu one because it literally just happened.
Yeah.
Well, but it's too funny not to share.
We've been together for a minute today, and we've had fun.
Oh, we always have fun.
This is true.
But this one, don't judge us after you hear this story, because we did get permission. We got permission from the mother.
Jill, if they were judging us, they started that.
Well, that's probably right. That's probably right.
Yeah, they keep listening.
I mean, this is a judgment-free zone. Yeah. It's like my gym.
Oh, no, it's not. No gym is a judgment-free zone.
I know. Why even put that on the wall?
They lie.
No, it's not.
Everybody's judging everybody.
Oh, man. Okay. So,
well,
Susie.
Okay. So, in a previous podcast, yes, I was telling my story about Jane Ann, or the Dick and Jane books.
Yes.
And, you know, I told you my visual with parents driving around in the minivan listening to this podcast. Right. And I'm just trying to keep it right.
100%.
Okay. So, I didn't say anything about
the D word.
I just said Jane. Now, like, look at Katie. She's already, like, about to pass out. So in the middle of my podcast, Katie says to us after we finish, she said, "Really? You can say hooker in the podcast, but you can't say dick and Jane in the podcast?"
You still can't say it.
You still look uncomfortable.
Well, I'm very uncomfortable about it.
It is a series. It's a book series.
It's a book series, which I described in like grotesque length. Like, I'm pretty sure we lost 50% of all the people listening to us in that length of time it took me not to say the little boy part of the Jane book. Okay, no, stop with that face. That's not what I meant, you dirty-minded girl. Holy moly.
But then
KJ friend, pops up.
She does. She says this.
Really? Yeah. Like, and I said, well, where was that sass in the middle of the recording?
Right.
And she said, well, I didn't know. And then I didn't know if I could say hooker again. And then
I didn't know if we were going to edit it out, and so I didn't
Blake
say it.
Blake said we're not
so
editing it.
I didn't say it.
Well, what did Blake say? Blake said both of those words
can be seen,
allowed
heard,
on
not seen.
Daytime TV.
No, they can't be seen.
They can't be seen.
That's
no. Oh, my God.
Oh, it's a different channel.
Now I'm sweating.
Stop. Back up. Go backwards. Go back.
Because
they can't unhear what you just said.
No, they can't.
What he said was both of those words are TV appropriate. They're not bleeped out on TV. And so therefore,
over me.
I'm telling you.
So we can say
educators
it on our educators.
Educators.
The problem is I use hooker a lot.
I know.
You do say that a lot, and I find it very funny.
Yeah, I feel like it encompasses a lot of things. A lot of my emotions. That says a lot. So as we are laughing about this, then we were talking about, I don't even know.
Jill calls me Katester.
I do call
me
Katester.
Which is a term of endearment. I do like it. A lot of people in my family call me that. And so I enjoy it.
And we were talking about
how we said we call him Blakester. And then my son's name is Reagan and they call him Regster. And then my older son's name is Ethan. And so we were saying, we couldn't say Ethanster.
No.
And then Jill asked me what Ethan's middle name is.
Here it is, folks. Here it is. Wait
the
for it.
Drop two story.
Wait for it. It is
Ethan Allen.
Now we understand we shouldn't be laughing. It's her child's name.
And it's a great choice.
It's our child's name.
This is my child's name.
And it's a great solid name, Katie.
Well, and so.
But
way
she
back,
then
way
says.
Way back when. Yeah. When we were. When I was pregnant, we couldn't decide. We could not agree on a middle or a first name. And Ethan was the only boy name that we could agree on. Well, then my husband's middle name is Alan. And he had to have his firstborn son's name. his middle name be also be Alan. And so I was like, well, we can't have a child's name. It can't be Ethan Allen. That's a furniture store. And
so rather large.
And so
it's got a solid brand behind it.
I mean, yeah, we did. We ended up doing that anyway. And I assumed that the furniture store would eventually go out of business. Or really
best part.
I hoped that it would.
We're sorry.
By the time it mattered. And here we are. He's 11. And Ethan Allen
is still a thing.
Furniture stores.
Wait, I mean, have you Googled
are
Ethan
still
Allen?
A thing.
Oh, yeah. They're
are
a
they
thing.
Still? They're still a
not
thing.
Not in Missouri.
No.
So he's got that going for
okay. So they're still a thing. Like,
we're getting the
yes.
nod. Yes.
They're still
they
a solid
are.
Thing. So that's what makes it so funny is that she says, well, we just thought it would go out of business. I mean, it's kind of like saying, I mean, I thought Google would evolve out.
Ethan Allen is
sure.
not as big I mean, as Google.
Okay.
I was just showing the Apple.
When I said Ethan Allen, do you get a picture in your mind immediately? I mean, yeah, okay. Yeah. So with Google. Well, that was a great. Okay, so there's your funny for the day. Yeah. Sometimes we just end up, you know, having a funny with each other.
I don't think he has any idea, though.
No. Well, let's not tell him.
His name is
I don't think
a furniture store.
And perhaps younger generation won't know.
And also, I don't think he'll care.
No, I don't
even
think he'll
care. Even if he did, he might think that right. was cool.
He probably will.
Until he goes to college and he's sitting around
on an Ethan Allen couch.
And somebody goes, wait, your middle name's Allen? Like the couch you're sitting on? And he's going to be devastated. He's going to pick the phone up.
I don't think that college boys have conversations about the furniture brands that they're sitting on. And I bet that they are not sitting on an Ethan Allen couch
in college.
Well, we can hope. I mean,
let it be our dream. Just let it play out in my mind as I want it to.
Right. Oh my gosh. Okay. Oh, I love starting every episode with a little laugh.
Yep.
A little laugh, a little humor to break up the day.
Furniture suggestions. Furniture.
It's very nice furniture.
Very
nice furniture. Okay, so the learning part of today is focusing on implementation of science of reading. So many of you have either been doing this for a very long time, or some of you might have heard the recent podcast from Emily Hanford, Sold a Story, and you think, oh my gosh, I need to be doing some of these things in my classroom. Or maybe your school's on the journey and you're just, you know, going further down the road and wanting to make it stronger. And so we just wanted to do a quick episode today that helped you on that journey. So as you're starting to implement the science of reading within your classroom, and perhaps you're thinking, am I doing all the things? Am I doing this right? Maybe I've done the letters training, but now what? You know, I think we're seeing a lot of that. Mm-hmm. Teachers are getting some really great knowledge, but now they have to figure out how do I go in and make that work right. With the kids in my classroom. And so we're just going to give you some tips today, mm-hmm. six tips on some things that you can do to incorporate some of this wonderful instruction into your classroom. So I'm going to start with number one, which is simple. Just understanding the science of reading. I say it's simple, but there's a lot of information out there. And so sometimes that can just feel overwhelming. Like, how do I know it's science reading? Am I reading the right stuff? How do I know that I'm doing it? So it really is just concentrating on those essentials to understand what the principles of the science of reading are. And it goes back years ago in 2005 when they released the reading panel, released their recommendations, and it goes back to the five components of reading. So you can always kind of ground yourself in these five components, which is phonemic awareness, phonics, fluency, comprehension, and vocabulary. So understanding those five things and how you can apply them in your practice is kind of step one. So I would recommend, you know, getting on, there's some really great groups on Facebook. What I Didn't Learn in College, the Science of Reading group is fantastic. Mm-hmm. The UFLY groups are fantastic, and there's no question too small, and there are a ton of resources on there. from brilliant minds across the country and beyond. There's definitely multiple countries who are watching this right now and are offering great insight. So just making sure that when you're looking at your materials, how do you know that you're doing phonological work? How do you know that you're doing phonics work? What is fluency work and how do I do that? What are some really great ways to teach vocabulary? What are some really great ways to teach comprehension? Those are individual episodes in itself that we can dig into over time. But just step one would be finding some really great groups that you can join that are asking questions, that are sharing resources, and you're getting yourself familiar with those five components and what that means. You ready for number two?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So the second thing that we're going to really talk about is assessment. And assessment kind of gets a bad name because you hear that and you think, oh my gosh, all we do these days is assess. And we have all these data points on our students. And it can be overwhelming because you are assessing a lot. But I think the key is to really make sure that you're using assessments in a purposeful way. And the thought behind the science of reading instruction wise is that you're creating an individualized plan for each of your students. You're trying to figure out, okay, what are their strengths? What are their weaknesses? And what do I need to do? What resources do I have to help move them from point A to point B in any of those different five components of reading? And so we do a lot of diagnostic assessments here that are going to assess where a student is on the continuum of phonemic awareness or phonics or fluency, vocabulary, or comprehension. And then you use the results from those assessments to create a plan. And if a student is really struggling in phonics, they're okay with phonemic awareness. That's what the data tells you, but they're really struggling in phonics. Then here are some great resources from UFLY or whatever it might be that are going to help them focus on learning whatever it is they need to learn.
Yeah, that was perfect. And so you might be asking yourself, how do I do that? How do I know? How do I know what to assess? How do I know what the problem is? And this has been a difficult thing for teachers to learn over the years because it is a lot to learn. And if you haven't had professional development on it, it can feel really overwhelming. Like, where do I start? There's a lot of pieces of phonological awareness. There's a lot of pieces of phonics. Like, what do I do? And so a few years ago, a colleague and I, Jana Schmidt and I, wrote a book to tell you just that. How do you know where to start? We had been consulting for a lot of years, and our job was to go in and help teacher teams. And, you know, we would say to ourselves, we need this information to be accessible from anybody, not just if we're there helping them. So we wrote a book. And the book is called Matching Reading Data to Interventions, a Simple Tool for Elementary Educators. It is on Amazon or on Rutledge. You can find it there. And what this book does is provide you with a tool to help you decide what is the missing skill that the child has and what do I do about it. So it's a really simple tool. You do your initial benchmarking. You figure out what's wrong. So hopefully, if you're not using some kind of benchmark, that would be a good first step. So Acadience has some great benchmarking tools online for free. You might have Dibbles, same kind of test. You might have AIMSWeb, same kind of test. You might have a multitude of different things that are testing those foundational skills. You do that original benchmark, and then you say, what do I do with these data? So that's where our tool comes in the book. And you use that, and it's going to tell you if they need letter naming. It's going to tell you if they need more phonological. It's going to tell you what to do as a next step within phonics. So it'll lead you down that path of additional diagnostic tests to find exactly where within the scope and sequence of phonics that we should start. And then you match it to what we're doing.
Jill, I have a question. How important, because I know this is going to happen, you named a couple of different assessments that we use or we partner with schools when we're consulting that use. So I guess, could you just speak to, you or Katie, one, speak to the importance of just get these data we're telling you to get.
Yeah.
Like, don't have that inner turmoil or the fussing amongst yourselves about what it is as right. opposed to, or how you're getting it right. versus what it is you're getting. Because right. I think a lot of times schools get stuck there. Mm-hmm. Well, we don't do doubles. We don't right. do this. We don't. So right. just, I think speaking to the fact that, like, leave that out.
Yeah.
If these are the five major components,
right.
find something
right.
that you can agree on in order to capture mm-hmm. data.
Yeah. Yeah. And I always tell schools, depending on where they are, Katie, jump in here, but there are some that have not adopted a uniform universal screener across schools yet. And so then teachers might say to us, well, we're not doing a foundational based assessment that will give us that information. And so in that case, I tell people to jump straight into a phonics diagnostic mm-hmm. or a phonological diagnostic mm-hmm. to figure out what skills a child has and what skills a child needs.
Well, and a lot of times a child can look like a very proficient reader,
yeah.
but then you later on down the road, whenever they see a lot of complex content specific text mm-hmm. in science or social studies, that's when then if they've looked like a proficient reader in elementary school, then right. all of a sudden now they start falling apart because they had phonics holes mm-hmm. that we never knew about because right. they never had a phonics screener. And so then they're in a phonics class or reading workshop type class in middle school because they're now needing to learn the foundational skills
yeah.
that they could have gotten had we given them some sort of a phonics screener
right.
early on in elementary school.
Right. So where do you get those? There are free ones online. Core Phonics will give you a free phonics screener. The Letters program has a free phonics screener. That's great. 95% Group has one. Really Great Reading has one. Press has one. That there are several out there that you can get that are no cost to you. And they only take a couple minutes per kid. It's not a time test. You're just trying to figure out where they are. So you give that to them. And wherever they start to not know it fluently is kind of where instruction starts. Mm-hmm. And so that'll give you some really great information about what they know and what they don't know.
And I, going back to the columns, I mm-hmm. loved using that in my classroom because it really does give you a perfect snapshot of once you have all this data, here you have your kids now grouped out into different sections based on skills. And yeah. so even if this is what your small group instruction is now going to look like, here right. are your kids that are super struggling in phonics. Here are the kids who need to work on fluency. Here are the kids who are fluent readers but really need to work on comprehension because they aren't understanding what they're reading.
Right.
Or then even if you have a volunteer or somebody that comes in, mm-hmm. you've got this map right yeah. there that shows you, okay, here's my kids that need to work on phonemic awareness, and here are these FCRR resources that are yeah. perfectly spelled out, and here you go.
Yeah.
So they really are a great tool.
Yeah. And the column, this is what we call the tool that we have in the book, is called the columns. So that is in there for you to use, and it's free online. So you can go get that tool for free and adapt it for your classroom or for your district. You'll find that with our book either on Google or on Rutledge. So, and if you're looking for a past screener, which is phonological, you can also Google that. You'll find some online that will tell you where within the larger scope of phonological awareness a child is needing some additional help. And the book has some great ideas on different resources that you can use that will match to phonological or to phonics or to fluency. There's lots of different choices, which actually leads us into number three. So after you have done the assessment, after you have figured out what the skills are, then selecting the appropriate curriculum and instructional materials is the next stage. So what I often find is that schools have a lot of stuff. They have bought a lot of stuff over the years, and that's because sometimes there are monies available and we have to spend the money,
yep.
right? Sometimes we know what to buy, sometimes we don't know what to buy. But oftentimes, if you just go look on your shelves in a book room or in an office, you're going to find a lot of great resources. So what, again, the book will help you figure out which resource matches to what need. And I think that's a really, really important piece that teachers have to understand. There are great resources out there. There are lots of needs. If you don't match the resource to the need, you will not get expected result. So I always tell people it's like going to the doctor. And if your blood pressure is high, they are not going to prescribe you amoxicillin. Amoxicillin is a fantastic drug. If you're sick and you have a sinus infection or strep throat, it is not going to cure your blood pressure. So if you have a resource that's a fantastic resource and you're not using it correctly, you're not going to get the intended result. And I think that's what we have to think about. And those are the kinds of things that we help schools with all the time. Mm-hmm. Tell us your resources. We'll help make sure you get it in the right place. We'll help you figure out the data and what it's telling you and what next steps you need and how you match that. So selecting that appropriate curriculum and instructional material piece is a big one, but it matches 100% with the assessment. You have to have the assessment first to know what to use. So that would be number three.
Well, and that just leads right in. No educator listening today will be shocked about really the next two, in my opinion, really big components of any kind of solid implementation plan, really, for anything, specifically in our case, science of reading, but just having time devoted to explicit instruction, especially in those five skill areas. Right. So like your phonemic awareness, your phonics, your vocabulary, your fluency, vocabulary, and comprehension, and making sure that instruction is following some type of developmentally appropriate mm-hmm. continuum, mm-hmm. right? We're not just going we can't put the cart before the horse, so to speak. I mean, there are foundational skills within those five things. Mm-hmm. So don't skip those. You got to hear sounds first, like being able to hear the sounds that words make and letters make when they make up a word are it's just a very, it's the building block. Like it's just the building block, and then moving into phonics and then your fluency. And I think comprehension is often times where we start and where teachers are so eager to get to, because mm-hmm. what's tested a lot of times in high stakes assessments.
It's the end goal.
Everybody
wants to get to comprehension.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I think if you're listening out there and you're a building leader or you're a teacher, just hear us say, please don't put that cart before the horse, because they can't comprehend what they cannot read. Yep. And just time and time again, we try to speed those building blocks and rearrange them to fit our needs mm-hmm. or our concerns. When in reality, those five skills, that's the order, you know, and be true to that, I guess, would be my suggestion and best advice. Right. Pedagogically speaking. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think in the kindergarten and first grade, even second grade ages, that's where you really have to focus so much on the foundational skills mm-hmm. and just trust the programs that you have mm-hmm. To know. I mean, I've talked with so many teachers, and the specific program I'm thinking of is Foundations, which is great. And they feel like it just doesn't go fast enough. They mm-hmm. want to jump and they want to go faster, especially in kindergarten. And I urge them so strongly to trust it and just go slow, so that the kids feel super confident and are really, really strong in letter names and letter sounds before you start trying to put them into books. Because putting sight words and things in front of them, like I see an airplane or something, that's a book that you're expecting them to read before a child knows all of their letter sounds. Mm-hmm. Like that, you're creating learning gaps.
I one time, and I don't know if I shared this on another podcast, but this is where, it's going to go into the next, our fifth thing of like mm-hmm. what you have to have. Mm-hmm. But I was doing an observation as a building principal one time in a classroom, it was first grade classroom. So exactly the age group Katie's talking about. And I did a 30-minute observation, and for, I'll say 20. I know it was longer than that, but I'll say 20. I did a 20-minute observation, and the entire time I was in the room during reading workshop for first grade, a child sat and stared at a book upside down. 20 minutes learning time for a at-risk student, and like would check every box of the at-risk, you know, descriptors. And I was just, I was sick, and I don't know how, you know, how do you address that? And I think these are what we're telling you addresses those things. And it's just something, these two components specifically, the explicit instruction to those five areas, those five core areas of reading, and then followed by your frequent opportunities for kids to practice and meaningful ways for them to practice. Why are we asking them to do things they cannot practice? And this goes back to the You Fly that started a conversation that Katie and I were having just a couple weeks ago, because we're constantly pushing ourselves, and I want independent practice that is engaging for kids while I am working with smaller groups. But it has to be accountable, and it has to practice those skills, those five things that I'm asking them to do. Granted, not all at one time, right? Mm-hmm. So if I have a learning group in here and we are really still kind of on phonics, or we are really on, you know, syllable types, I want to make sure that that small group learning or the independent practice, I guess, is reinforcing that skill I'm teaching them in small group.
Yeah. Right.
Does that make sense? I think that's critical.
Yeah. And I think sometimes we do, like once you kind of jump into these science of reading practices, we put in interventions and kids are getting some foundational skill practice in a word work lesson that you're doing. And then they're getting skill skill instruction in your word work time, and then more skill instruction in intervention time. And then sometimes even more word work instruction during small group. And so I'm like, no, you got to have them practice. Like,
and that's what I was going to say. And you know what I saw as a building administrator every single time, not every single time, but more often than not. And that is my leadership negligence. So please don't hear me pointing fingers at a teacher. But what I would see was that independent practice was all about comprehension. Mm-hmm. And it didn't matter. Like the independent practice, more times than not, would go back to comprehension.
Right.
And
that's great if they can read it.
Right.
For sure.
Like,
for
you know, sure. I mean, again, end goal, comprehension. And, you know, I think.
But kiddos who cannot read.
Right.
Can't practice reading.
Not, right.
Do you see what I'm saying? Yes. And like that is where.
Meet them where they are.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Meet them where they are. And, you know, and I think we always have to remind each other that, you know, science of reading is not just phonics and phonemic awareness. Like that, you know, I worry we always are swinging one way or the other. And it is not. It is an important piece, and it's not easy to teach. And most teachers didn't necessarily get a lot of information about how to teach those two components.
Oh, they didn't.
In their undergrad. No,
I didn't.
You probably did get a lot about comprehension and vocabulary, and I think people feel more comfortable there.
Mm-hmm. And engaging students
and
in
engaging,
reading.
Right.
Sure. Like, I mean, how do you engage
students?
And we
do. We want them to love reading.
Absolutely.
But they're not going to love it if they can't do it.
Yeah. I always say there would not be illiterate adults if people develop mentally learn to read. Like, why? How can we possibly say that an adult who is 60 years old and has been immersed in a world where there are words everywhere around you and they still can't read?
Right.
If they can't read, they can't read. No one ever taught them the basics of how to read. And so you have to know how to teach those things. But Scarborough's Rope would tell you, you know, there's a whole comprehension language piece of that, you know. So you've got the foundational, and then you've got, well, what do I do? How do I get them to understand complex text? How do I get them to break it down? How do I get them to analyze what they're thinking? You know, that's all really important too. And that goes back to number four, explicit instruction. You can't just expect a kid to pick up a book and understand what to do. You have to teach them explicitly what you're wanting them to do.
Well, and then, you know, and we talked about that, and we talked about the practicing going hand in hand with that.
Yes.
And I just say that because I love these things we're talking about today, because to me, in my mind, they're very linear, right? Like,
right.
I guess. And so then the next thing is, you teach the explicit skill, you give them time to practice those explicit skill sets.
And then the last one is you monitor their progress. So we have to see, we have to do occasional check-ins to see, is what we're doing working? And if it is, that's fantastic. Keep doing it. Maybe they need to move on to the next thing. But if it's not, we need to dig deeper and see what can we do to intensify instruction for this student.
Yeah. And how do you monitor the progress? You either go back and you do some progress monitoring within Adibles or Acadience or FastBridge or something that you have, or you go back and give that phonics screener again and see if they've grown within that, if you don't have those other assessments to give. So you're monitoring what you're teaching, or within the UFLY, you know, you're monitoring how they're doing. Are they applying it? Are they getting it? Are they, you know, passing the assessments that I'm giving? So there are ways to monitor progress. There are lots of different ways to monitor progress. And I think the important part of today's episode, this is all things you can do in your classroom. Mm-hmm. So if you are a teacher who is saying, okay, I'm on board, I heard the Soul to Story podcast, I know there are ways to do this, I'm doing some letters training, whatever it is, wherever you are in your journey, these things today are all things you can do in your classroom tomorrow to start doing some things. There's a whole nother episode on how do you do this at a building level, or how do you do this at a district level, right? But these things you can do
with free. I mean, they're
tomorrow
free.
For free.
Yeah, for free.
There's lots
I think
of,
that's what's
there
fantastic.
Are so many great free resources, and probably we should do an episode on just that. Like, how do you find some free resources and what are they? But there are some really, really great ones out there. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Okay. So this was our crash course in, science of reading and implementing in your classroom. We hope it was helpful for you. And we'll be back with additional ways to help in the future. All right. Until then.
Thank you so much.
That's our get schooled for today. Get schooled on science of reading. We hope to see you all again soon.